One of the things that I do, and I better say that first, I better plant my feet. One of the things that I do like to ask at the beginning of this seminar is, how many are here that are not married? There are a few. Good. Excellent. There was half a dozen in the last seminar, too, that were not married. And that's a good time to learn, if you will, how to love your wives. I come to you today not as an expert, believe me. I'm still married. but I have been married for 31 years, and that says something, I guess. I've learned a few things, hopefully, in that 31 years. About 18 years ago, I want to say, maybe 19, a young couple in our assembly came to us, and came to me and said, we would like you to marry us. That had never happened before, and so I squared that away with my elders and the authorities and all of those kinds of things. And as we look forward to this first wedding, for me in that sense, my wife and I sat down and said, you know, there was a lot of things that we have learned by trial and error over the last 15 years of our marriage, that maybe we could share some of our experiences with the young people before they get married, so that maybe we would help them get at least one step in the right direction ahead of time. So we set out to read a few books. Some were helpful. Many were not, frankly. But you got to read all kinds of books before you find out which ones are the good ones. The second thing is we wanted to share with these young people some of our experiences in life and the things that we have learned from each other. And so this seminar, in a lot of ways, is a culmination of all of these learning experiences over the last number of years. I'd like to start out really by reading the scriptures that apply to our seminar this afternoon. We read first in Ephesians chapter 5, a very famous passage. In Ephesians chapter 5, the one that the preachers always start out at 22 and never get beyond verse 22 for obvious reasons, and that's why we are going to start in verse 25. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, or for her, if you will, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, and that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, even as the Lord of the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. And then one verse from 1 Peter 3, which is on the top of your handouts, in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7, likewise ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge or understanding, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. The first thing I want you to notice about the Ephesians 5 passage is this, that Paul specifically tells us that he is speaking to us concerning Christ and the church. That is the import of the passage. That is what we are to learn from the passage. We are to learn how Christ loved the church. Now, by implication, we can begin to apply that to ourselves, because Christian marriage is, in fact, to be a picture of that wonderful relationship between Christ and the church. So if I want to learn how to love my wife, then I need to understand how Christ loved the church. And if I can begin to understand something of how Christ loved the church, then maybe, just maybe, I can learn something about how I ought to love my wife. So first of all, we want to look at Christ, right? That's where we need to face, that's where we need to begin. And we begin to think about how Christ loved the church. Number one, his love is a love which is part of his being, isn't it? Now, therefore, his love is eternal. Therefore, his love is absolutely infinite. Not only eternal, but infinite. His love is not only eternal and infinite, but his love never changes because he never changes. Jesus Christ, the same, yesterday and today and forever. His love was a kind of love that was not based in his emotions, but it was based in his will. He placed his love upon us. And when he placed his love upon us, he demonstrated that love to us in the most wonderful way that could ever be demonstrated, in that he willingly gave himself a sacrifice for us. He died for us. Not only did he die for us, but he lives for us every moment of the day. His mind, his thoughts are constantly upon us. And his love is a love which understood us completely. He knew who we were. And in spite of who we were, if you will, he loved us anyway. And he wooed us to himself by that great eternal love that he had for us. And when he wooed us to himself, he says, I want to mold you, I want to make you, I want to present you to myself as a perfectly wonderful, glorious, spotless, unblemished church. And he once set about in our lives to fulfill his purpose in us. And he says, now I want you to love as I love. And you're all sitting there and saying, just like I would sit there and saying, just ain't possible. And I would agree with you 100%. It just is not possible. Number one, I am not God, and neither are you. And therefore, our love cannot be infinite. Our love cannot be eternal. Our love cannot, will not be that which will not change. Because we, is that the way the song says it? Our love still ebbs and flows. And that's not only to God, but it's to our wives, it's to those around about us. And so therefore, when I come to this passage, and I read through this passage, and I say, this is talking about Christ and the church, I'm saying, now wait a minute. If I am commanded, and that's what I understand this to be, husbands, love your wives. Now, in the Greek, it's in the continuous present tense. Now, sometimes, in the continuous present tense, it means the imperative. I'm not absolutely certain. I couldn't really determine if that is in the imperative mode here. But it is in the continuous present mode. In other words, this is a love which I need to have as a constant in my life. And that is the way I'm to love. Now, when I look at that, and I'm saying, wait a minute, I can't do this. And yet I am commanded, if you will, to do this. I'm also to love that way to my, all the brothers and sisters in the body of Christ, am I not? Is that not what John 13, verses 34 and 35 tell us? That in fact, this commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another, even as I have loved you, so what ye ought also to love one another, by this shall all men know that you're my disciples. And so that's the same thing. So in other words, we are commanded to do this not only into the body of Christ, but we are commanded to do this specifically to that one who is nearest and dearest to us, and that is our wife. And so I'm saying, now wait a minute, something is missing in this picture. Something is wrong. I can't love to that extent. And so I say, now wait, let me think about it this in a different way. Maybe what Christ is trying to tell us here is not to the extent of his love, but the character of his love. Now that begins to make sense to me. I begin to say there is qualities, character qualities about his love, which I am to emulate in my life. Now, I'm here to tell you today that there is nothing in your life or in mine, especially as men, by the way, that really has this ability. I mean, we don't tend to think relationally. We tend to think with facts and figures. We tend to think with our minds. We tend not to worry as nearly as much as our wives do, by the way, about relationships. If a young couple comes to me and says, we're having trouble in our marriage, and I will look at the wife and I'll say, on a scale of 1 to 10, where do you think this relationship is? And it will always be different than her husband's answer, and it will be always more correct than her husband's answer. Because she is more attuned to relationships than men are, in general. So we don't have this ability naturally, do we? I want to tell you something. Neither does the woman have it naturally to submit to her husband's, to her husband. As a matter of fact, if I understand Genesis chapter 3 and verse 16 correctly, when it has this idea of her desire shall be to her husband, I heard from a Hebrew scholar at one time that that's a Hebrew idiomatic expression, which means that she desires to control her husband. The same expression is used in Genesis chapter 4, where sin lieth at the door and his desire is toward you. To control. But, says Genesis 3:16, you shall rule over her. Whoa. We like that, don't we? But that doesn't make for good marriages. I mean, a wife that doesn't want to submit and a husband that wants to rule with control, you can guarantee there is going to be all kinds of conflict in that marriage. But you see, we do have the Spirit of God in our hearts, do we not, as believers? And the Spirit of God has been given to me in order to shed the love of God abroad in my heart. Isn't that what Romans chapter 5 tells me? So I do have the Spirit of God within, and I have the example of Christ and his love to the church, from which I can learn how to love my husband. Learn how to love my wife. Just as a wife being filled with the Spirit, Ephesians chapter 5, can learn to submit to her husband as she has submitted to the Lord, which is what 5:22 tells me. And so the woman can learn to submit just as I can learn to love. But it takes the Spirit of God in both of our lives to be able to make that happen. And it takes looking at Christ in a very special way for you and I as men to learn how to love. So that's what we would like to look at this afternoon very briefly. And then I want to look at 5 different characteristics, which are on your handout, that I want to look at just very, very briefly this afternoon. One is that I need to love as Christ loved the church in order to provide security for my wife. I need to love my wife in such a way that I sacrifice for her as Christ sacrificed for the church. I need to love my wife with a purpose in mind as Christ loved the church with a purpose in mind. I need to love my wife so as she is nurtured through my love to her as Christ nurtures me in his love for me. And I need to love my wife with the understanding of who she is. Now don't get excited. I understand that men will never understand women. But the reality is that there are things about them we can understand and we ought to understand in order that we can love them with understanding and obey the passage in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7. So those are the things we're going to look at very briefly this afternoon. And area number 1 is to love so as to provide security. One of the great cardinal truths of the gospel is this, that Christ loves us and he has given us eternal life. What a wonderful doctrine is the doctrine of eternal security. When I don't believe in the doctrine of eternal security, I am not secure in the love of Christ for me. And it begins to depend on me, does it not? And I'm never sure if I've done enough. And it tends toward works for salvation. It tends towards works in the process of living a Christian life. And in reality, that's not what the Bible teaches, is it? It teaches that us that love that is given to us by Christ, is we are absolutely secure in it. It will never change toward us. And I can relax. I can be comfortable, if you will, in his love. And that is a great reality in our lives as Christ loved the church. Just so should I love my wife. To provide for her security. Now, here comes an interesting difference, if you will, between men and women. We tend, as men especially, as opposed to women, we tend toward being secure in what we can do. Now, I think that's God-given. We are to provide for our families. Therefore, we're going to go out. We're going to get a training. We're going to get a job. We're going to work hard. We're going to work with the sweat of our brow, Genesis chapter 3, whatever, to provide for that family that God has given to us and we are responsible for. The security comes from what I can do. And so we tend to say, well, okay, fine. If I get security in what I do, then I can give security to my wife with what I do for her. So I figure, well, she's got a house, and she's got a refrigerator, and she's got a dishwasher, and she's got, you know, whatever. I mean, that's got to give her all the security in the world, right? I mean, obviously, my wife ought to be secure in that. You know what? You may make her happy that way, but she will never find security in that. Because there is a real reality, is I don't find security in what Christ did for me. Now let me define that. Let's go back to Exodus chapter 12, and we have the Passover, right? And we kill the lamb, and we shed its blood, and we put it on the outside of the door post and the lintel, right? And then we come inside, and we rest secure that when God sees the blood, he will hover over the door and not suffer the death angel to pass by. Now, what makes me safe? The blood. What makes me secure? The blood? The blood makes me safe. God's word makes me secure. I am secure behind those doors. If I was in Egypt that night, I'm secure because God said he would pass over the door. You know what I find my security in? This unchanging, eternal word. He has told me in his word that he loves me. And if I doubt it, I can go back and read it again. Yeah, because this word never changes. Isn't that wonderful? I find security in who he is. He is the trustworthy, truthful, faithful God. And I can rest in that. If he is not truthful, if he is unfaithful, then anything he's done for me isn't worth anything, is it? Now what happens is, your wife will find security. If you want to love your wife, as Christ loved the church, you will provide security for your wife, not in what you do for her, but in what you are as a person. Let me give you something very practical. When was the last time, and I don't want to raise a hand here, I don't want to embarrass anybody, if you told your wife about halfway through the week, on Saturday morning I'll fix that drip in the faucet. You know what happened on Saturday morning? Something else came up that you thought was more important. And you forgot it. I mean, after all, it's a dripping faucet. It's only costing you $15 a day. You know. So you go out and you do whatever. You know, whatever it is. Anything from golf and fishing to maybe even something more important. You know. But you forget about it. And the next Saturday comes and you forgot about it. And pretty soon she's nagging you and you don't like it because she's nagging you. And then you get your faith, your back up against it. And you know, we got a problem, don't we? But what is the real problem? the drippy faucet? No. The real problem is the fact that your wife has lost some confidence in you because you haven't kept your word. You want to have a good relationship? Fix the drippy faucet on Saturday when you tell her you're going to fix it. I mean, that's pretty practical. That's down there. That's the kind of stuff that's going to build a good relationship. I mean, this is not theoretical here. This is good practical stuff. You know, I remember when I was on the road working for Hallmark Cards back a number of years ago, and I'd leave on home Monday morning, I'd get home Thursday night. That was my usual schedule. And she would be waiting for me on Thursday night coming home, right? I mean, I'd been gone all week, and she had all kinds of things for her, because she would make her nicest supper. I had great suppers, and Thursday night was always the best suppers in our house when I was on the road. Because she was glad to see me come home, you know, here we are, see? And so she prepared this wonderful supper, and something came up, a customer kept me late, I got tied up in traffic, who knows what all happened. Man, I was on the road, right? And I showed up about 2 hours late. The hot tongue and cold dinner. That doesn't do anything for a relationship. You know, we made a pact with each other at my wife's suggestion. She says, if you're going to be more than 30 minutes late, she says, I understand that you can be tied up in a custom. I understand that you can be tied up in traffic. I understand that. She says, I don't understand why you can't take 30 seconds away and get to a telephone and call me and say, hey, honey, I'm going to be an hour late tonight. If you're going to be more than 30 minutes late, you call me. And I commit my word to that. And it helps our relationship together. Providing security, not in what you do, but in keeping your word to your wife. And those little tiny things can eat away at a relationship. You know, divorce does not happen because of one big blowout. Divorce happens because of the relationship gets picked and picked and picked away at by little things like men not keeping their word. Now, I'd like you, on your sheets, sometime today to put down one goal in this column that you say, when I get back home, and some of you don't even have to, some of these things you won't have to wait to get back home. Go back home, but I'm going to, from here on in, I'm going to do something. Maybe there's something you have forgotten that your wife's been nagging you. Maybe you need to say, hey, as of when I get back home, my high priority is going to be getting that little whatever it is done around the house so that I can show my wife that I love her and she means more to me than a lot of other things and all that. Christ gave me absolute security in who he is in the fact that he kept his word. And we ought to provide security for our lives in the same way. Area number two. Area number two is sacrificially. Now, we have all understood that Christ loved us with a sacrifice and demonstrated his love to us in a way that no one else can do, nor can we do for our wives. He gave himself for us. He died for us. Now, but while we can't love with the extent of his love, we can love with the quality and the character of his love that can. Now, when you and I think about sacrifice, maybe it's because I'm a Scotsman, I'm not sure. I may help. And I live in a Dutch community, which is even worse. But the reality is this, that I tend to think about sacrifice by what it cost me. Again, what am I providing? What am I saying? Sacrifice is what I can do for my wife. Man, I can go out and I can buy her this wonderful little pendant or this wonderful little thingamabobby that she wants around the house, whatever it is. And it costs me $35 to do that or $50 or, you know, maybe even more than that. Who knows? And you start to say, boy, I've sacrificed. We start that pretty young in life. We go out to a playground. We get about a group of 10, 11-year-old boys, you know, and some girls running around. You get what the guys are doing. They're showing off for the girls, right? By the time they're 15, 16, they got to have the biggest car, the hottest engine, whatever. Wow, show off to the girls. Because we want to impress them with what we can do and how wonderful we are, see? That's what we tend to do. You know what? I have learned that women are not impressed. And we really need to understand that a bit. You know what they're impressed with? They're impressed with the sacrifice of time. Because, see, they don't want what we can give them. They want us. What does that text say? Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. Oh, talk about time. Now, that's a different story. You know, I wonder when the last time was that you said to your wife, and you came home, and you saw your wife was a bit haggled, and you say, honey, why don't we just go out for dinner tonight? And you took her out to some restaurant, and you just spent some time with her. And said, you're important. You said, you don't have to say it. You don't have to say it. She knows intuitively that you value her as a person because you have spent time with her. And I know if your schedule is anything like that mine, that's a sacrifice for you and me too. But that's what we need to sacrifice for, lasting time. And I wonder when the last time you asked your wife out on a date. I mean, don't date your wife, right? Oh, guys. That's a very bad habit we get ourselves into. We need to date our wives. We need to make them feel important. Take them out to a restaurant. I don't mean that. You don't have to take them out to the snaz and then spend $20 a meal. You know, unless somebody gives you some money to do that. But the reality is, it doesn't have to be fancy. What she is not interested in is the biggest steak in town. She's interested in you spending time in valuable communication with her. That's what she wants. Now, sometimes that's a sacrifice, not only of our time, but our sacrifice of our money along with it. You know, sometimes, you know, restaurants does cost money, aren't they? You know, people who do surveys on this kind of stuff, and I always take these surveys with a bit of a grain of salt, but this was an interesting one to me. I said, a wife needs to hear, to be able to communicate with her husband 30 minutes a day. Now, you can delete that from the tape if you'd like. Before you let your wife listen to you. Because, folks, 30 minutes, I'm not talking about the kind of communication that is necessary for the running of a house. You know, where's the kids? You know, where's dinner? You know, let's do the dishes. I'm not talking about that. That's not communication. That's, you know, the necessities of life. I'm talking about sitting down with 30 minutes a day. That's a lot of talking. It's a whole lot more than you and I are really willing to share, are we not? But maybe you don't have to. Maybe we could spend 2 hours one night, and then you don't have to worry about it for 4 days. You know? but somewhere along the line, you and I need to talk and commune and have fellowship with our wives in a meaningful, quiet way, which tells her, I love you, and I'm willing to sacrifice an evening. I'm willing to sacrifice a game of golf. I'm willing to, whatever it is that you're planning on sacrificing for this, I'm willing to spend time and effort with you, because you are important to me. Write down in that sheet when the next date you're going to take your wife out on. Make a date with yourself, and make a date with your wife. It'll do your relationship more good than maybe anything else you've done in this past year. I want to ask you a question. Maybe I'm talking to the converted. How many guys regularly take their wives out on dates? See, I'm talking to some of the converted. That's good. We need to you unmarried guys out there, remember this. Write it down. Don't quit dating as soon as you get done, as soon as you get married. That's what we're going to talk about next. Loving with a purpose. Now, The purpose that the Lord had in our lives is to sanctify us and cleanse us and make us unblemished and unblameable and unreprovable. I'm here to tell you, folks, don't get into that business with your wife. That's the Lord's business with your wife. It's not yours. But there is a purpose in marriage. Not to make her perfect, because you can't do that. And I give you a few reasons why you can't. Number one, you're not. But there is a purpose in marriage. You know what it is? It's one flesh. A one flesh relationship. That's the purpose in marriage. Now, that purpose is both positional and progressive. Now, you want to go back to a bit of theology. Christ has a purpose in our life, and that is to sanctify us, right? Now, that's both positional and progressive, is it? Now we know our theology, don't we? The moment I'm saved, I am sanctified. But all through my life, He's working in my life, sanctifying me as we go through life. I am sanctified, I am being sanctified, and one day I'm going to be completely and totally sanctified. You see? It's both positional and progressive. Just like one flesh is both positional and progressive. You know what? We tend to like the positional aspect of it. You know, we've dated our wives, we've given them flowers, we've spent time and money and effort and all of these things on our wives, and finally they succumb to our wooing and loving them, and we finally get them up to the altar, and they say, I do, and you say, I do, and relationship. God made it that way. By the way, minister doesn't do that. God does. And what God has joined together, let no man put asunder. And we've got to get back to some of that teaching in the church today. Okay, fine. But there is a progressive aspect of that. And it's on three different levels. It's on the physical, it's on the emotional, and it's on the spiritual level. Now, the physical part, which we're not going to get into, but in reality, that, by the way, guys, is one of the easier aspects, isn't it, of the one-flesh relationship, the sexual area of marriage. Not that it doesn't take some learning, not that it doesn't take some knowledge, not that we shouldn't work at it properly and all of those kinds of things, and we're given directions in the Scripture regarding that, and it's fine. But in reality, that's just one aspect, and maybe not the first aspect that we ought to be thinking about, guys. That's a little unusual for us, isn't it? But in fact, we have two other aspects, and one of them, the second aspect, is emotional. In the emotional aspect of life, I need to meet her emotional needs. One of the great ways in which I can meet her emotional needs is by romance. Touch. I forget who it was told me. They came out of my seminar yesterday and saw his wife. He went right over to her and gave her a kiss. And I said, great, you learned something. You know, when you're first married, isn't it easy, you know, you leave your wife, you give her a kiss goodbye in the morning, you give her a kiss, you know, hello at night, and you know, you give her a hug here and there, now and then during the day, you know, and pretty soon the kids come along and it gets busy and, you know, and pretty soon, well, hi, how, bye, you know, leave a note, whatever, you know, and suddenly there's none of this touch. A woman needs that. A woman needs to know that we care. You know, Boyd Nicholson gave a story at the end of his message this morning that said he needed to know the Lord loved him. He needed a kiss from the Lord. And doesn't He do that in our lives? Doesn't He come to us in our lives when we need Him? And we say, Lord, are You there? And He comes and He puts His arms around us, and you know, the figurative, right? Sure, we're talking about. But He puts His arms around. He gives us that assurance, that touch, the realization that yes, I am here. I am close. I love you. And we feel ourselves enfolded in His love and in His care as I read the Scriptures and He ministers to me in that wonderful way. Just that way. We need to be ministered to our wives to tell them. You know, there was the old story, you know, about the fellow that his wife came up to him 10 years after they were married and says, you know, they never tell me you love me anymore. He said, well, I told you that at the altar, and if I change my mind, I'll let you know. that's the kind of things that we are capable of doing. Our wives need to hear from us. Our wives need to be held by us. Our wives need to be walked hand in hand in the mall. You hold hands with your wife when you walk? We ought to express ourselves in these non-sexual kinds of ways that I'm one with you. I love you. I'm proud to be near you. I want to be near you. And that does something wonderful for a lady. And thirdly, is the spiritual area. We need to be the spiritual leaders in our homes. Because in fact, we cannot meet our wives' deepest need to be loved and be loved. To love and be loved. Only God can completely fill that desire. You can't fill it in your wife's life. She can't fulfill it in your life. You know, we tend to look for satisfaction, for fulfillment, as the psychologists would like to tell us, by people, putting our expectations in people, putting our expectations in things. You know, if I only had a new car, you know? Bigger expense. More money, that's all we got is. Or maybe we put our expectations in places. If I could only be in a certain place, if I could only do this, if we could only come to Lexington, our spiritual lives are going to be out and straightened around. Lexington will not straighten out your spiritual life. Only God will straighten out your spiritual life. And if we don't hear God here, Lexington isn't worth it. It's just a big expense. That's all it is, unless we hear God, because only God can meet that. And it is our responsibility as men to make sure our wives are in touch with God. We're responsible for that. We are responsible not only to lead in things like family devotions and these kinds of things where we're looking at God together as a couple, but in reality, I only truly find satisfaction in life with not only when I'm listening to God, but when I'm serving Him. You know, I really find happiness in serving, and so will everybody else. It's when I get my mind off of myself and onto somebody else that is a joy. Isn't it joy? You know, Jesus, others you, and others is in the center there, you know, kind of a thing. But it's there that we find joy. It is there that we find happiness. And when I learn to serve God, and that means not only do I lead in serving my family, but I lead in my family serving in the local church. When I lead in serving, it is there that I'm going to find my deepest satisfaction because God will meet me in that. Because I'll not have my mind on myself. I'll have my mind on someone else. And it is our responsibility as leaders in the family to be able to direct our families so that they're not only serving God, but they're serving others, and in that their deepest need will be met of to be loved and loving others. And this is where we need to be in our families. So that I meet my, and you know what? I'm gonna say something from experience. If you are leading your family for God and you're truly serving the Lord, if you are touching, romancing, if you will, demonstrating your love to your wife on an emotional, non-sexual level, when those two areas in your life are met, I will guarantee you, I will give you a money-back guarantee on this, that in fact the sexual area of your life will improve and be more wonderful. Because in fact, while you and I put that a little more high in our priorities in life as men, women don't. And if they don't sense the reality of their emotional and spiritual needs being met, you won't have a wife that will respond sexually to you either. May we understand that we need to meet this and that we grow together as a one flesh relationship. Area number four, how are we doing? Area number four. Loving with nurture. Christ, after he redeemed us, as he told his disciples in John chapter 14, I'm going away, but I'm not going to leave you as orphans. I'm going to send you another comforter. One that will come alongside you. One that will be not only with you, but he will actually indwell you. And when he indwells you, he's going to lead you into all truth. He's going to lead you to me. He's going to reveal me to you. I'm going to nurture you by the revelation of myself throughout life. You go to 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and 1 Corinthians chapter 3, as we are given the revelation of God, the mind of God by the Spirit of God, it is that that brings us to maturity. If we are not following the wisdom of God and allowing the Spirit of God to reveal himself to us through the Word, then we're going to remain babes, aren't we, in many, many ways. That's what chapter 3 starts out by saying. But in fact, the Spirit of God has been given to us to nurture us and to lead us and to guide us. How does he do that? Is he a hard taskmaster? Is he one who beats us over the head? Is he one who does this in a critical mode? Is he one that does this to us as he lectures to us? No, he leads us daily along. He leads us as we can comprehend it. He leads us in a gentle, quiet way. There are times in our life when we're not growing like we ought to, and instead of beating us over the head, the Spirit loves us, doesn't he? And he woos us back to God and to the Word. And as he does that, then we begin to grow again, nurture. We grow in an atmosphere of tenderness. We grow in an atmosphere of care. We grow in an atmosphere of love. We do not grow well. None of us grow well in an atmosphere of criticism. Check the bosses that you have worked for over your life. Which bosses did you work for in your life that did you put out more for? The guy who was always on your case? The guy who was always critical? The guy who never complimented you? The guy who you could never do anything right for? Or was it the fellow who came alongside of you and said, hey, that's a good job, but can I suggest something? You know, and he led you, and he guided you, and he helped you to do your job the best you could do. That was the boss you enjoyed working for, wasn't it? You know what? Your wife ain't that much different. She will also grow in an atmosphere of care and tenderness. Not in an atmosphere of lectures. Not in an atmosphere of criticism. You see, when we marry our wives, we marry this wonderful person, don't we? I mean, marriage is blind. Or, you know, love is blind. It's marriage is the eye opener, right? And so all of a sudden we get this girl home, and we find out, wow. And you know what? You know what? You know what we find wrong with this girl? We find wrong with this girl that we married, the very thing that drew us to her to begin with. I married a wonderful, wonderful lady. I was an outgoing person. Maybe I shouldn't put that in the past tense. I am an outgoing person. I enjoy being with people. I enjoy doing things and being out and talking to people. I'm rejuvenated by the people I talk to. You know who I married? I married a girl who is quiet. I married a girl who gets rejuvenated by solitude. I married a girl who enjoys being alone. It was that that drew me to her, very frankly, because she was quiet and let me talk, right? Yeah. Hey, I'm looking for a girl that shuts up and lets me talk once in a while, right? You know what? That's what starts bugging you in your marriage. Opposites do attract. You know what happens? I had to learn in my marriage that I had to see that difference not as an obstacle to our relationship, but a help in our relationship and a help in my maturing. Because every once in a while, I need a wife that says, Jim, will you say no once? I need that. And she knows I need that. And she'll tell me when I need that. And I'm thankful she tells me I need that. I don't like it, but I'm thankful for it. You see, We need to communicate within marriage in a very deep and wonderful way that the differences, the problem there is, the things that irritate in our marriage are brought there so that God can teach us through those things to be a more mature, wonderful person, a more well-rounded person. That's why God brought her into your life. Don't lecture her. Don't let her live in a spirit of criticism in your house. That's not going to do anything. It's going to do something and say, honey, we need to sit down and talk about something. I've got a problem here. Let's work this thing out. Be honest, open communication. Honest, open communication is absolutely vital to a marriage. Revealing of who you are and allowing her to reveal herself to you. You know, you didn't marry a single lady. Well, you married a single lady, yes. But you didn't. Let me rephrase that. You didn't marry just the lady. You married her entire background. You married the way she treated her father. You married the way her father treated you. You married the person and the way she was treated by her siblings and her. I mean, you married her background as well as her. And we better understand that. Some of us might make wiser decisions if we would think about that before we got married. But in reality, she's ours. And she was brought into our life. And she will not learn. And neither will I in a critical spirit in the home. We will both learn as we reach out in tenderness to her. As we put our hand on her hand and say, honey, we've got a problem here. I'd like to talk about it. Is this a good time? And if it isn't a good time, don't talk about it. Don't get out the overhead projector. Don't have a 3-point sermon alliterated. Listen to her first. Let her express herself. Let her tell you what she's thinking. And then respond to that in a non-critical way so that both of you can learn to grow together. The Lord Jesus treats us with the utmost of care, with the utmost of tenderness, with the utmost of patience. How many times has he taken you by the hand and says, here, we've got a problem here. Can I talk to you about it? And sometimes he said, no, not now, Lord. And he's okay. They keep bugging us until we finally said, okay, fine, I'm ready. And then he'll reveal himself and his will to us, and we can grow in the process. And we learn, wow, this isn't bad. He really wants to help me. And that's just exactly the way your wife and you will grow together as you learn to communicate one with another. Fifth area. Is, in some senses, a summary area. It's distinct. I'm handling it distinct in one way. And yet there's a real sense of which it overrides all of the other things. It says in 1 Peter chapter 3 that we are to dwell with our wives according to knowledge or understanding. Isn't it wonderful that the Lord loves us with an understanding love? He remembers our frame. He knows that we're dust. He will never tempt us above what we are able, but will, with that temptation, give us a way of escape. But the scriptures, all the way through, I've jotted a number of them down for you just to jog your mind to get you thinking along that line. The Lord understands us, and he wants to demonstrate in his love in our lives in a way that we can understand it. Now, but Peter goes on to say in that passage in 1 Peter chapter 3, he says, dwell with them according to knowledge, as unto giving honor to the wife, as unto the weaker vessel. Honor. Do we place honor upon our wife? Do we place a value? That's what the word means. Do we place a value on our wives? What kind of value is she to us? You want me to tell you, I am unworthy of the least of God's mercies, that he placed a value upon me. He loved me. He valued me enough to die for me. He held me up and he said, I will die for your mission. Oh, I understand him. I understand how obnoxious he can be. I understand how sinful he is. I understand how weak he is. I understand all of these things about it, but I place a value on him, even though he's unworthy in himself. I place a value on him, and I will die for him. And I know exactly what I'm doing. Wow. What kind of value do you place in your life? Where is she in your scale of values? Is she number 2, 3, 4, 16, 20? Do we put a place of value upon her? We need to let her know that we do place a value on her as a person. Not only a value on her as a person, but a value on her as a person with respect to the fact that she's the weaker vessel. Now don't do that, don't say that to your wife, and then arm wrestle her because she's liable to out-wrestle you. Don't place a value upon her, unless you're Ken Hampton, of course. Don't talk to her about being a weaker vessel and then find out that she's more emotionally stable than you are. But what are we talking about? There's two concepts that I think we're talking about here. Number one is the word here is fragile. I like that. If I were to place a value on my wife is fine bone china. She's not cheap plastic. You know what I can do with cheap plastic? I can throw it against the wall and it's not going to break. I'm not going to do that with fine bone china, am I? I've got this wonderful $18 fine bone china plate in my hand. You think I'm going to drop it? You think I'm going to handle that with anything but tenderness and care? You think I'm going to handle that without understanding that it's not going to be able to be thrown on the floor? I'm going to handle that as it is. It's fragile. And I'm responsible to keep that fine bone china intact in every way. See, I treat my wife like a piece of fine bone china, not something I can throw around, throw against the wall, and hope she survives. And it's so easy for us to do that as men, to throw our wives against the wall. We don't do it intentionally, believe me. The things that we don't think are anything are big things in her life, and we find that we're really dropping the ball. Secondly, if she is fine bone china, I have been given the responsibility for her. That's the idea of headship, isn't it? That's the bottom line idea of headship. It isn't ruling over. It's the responsibility for. And as I take my responsibility seriously, as God takes his responsibility with me very seriously, then I demonstrate to him, I demonstrate to my wife, that I'm loving her as Christ loved the church. I need to understand that she needs to talk more than I do. This stuff alone. I need to understand that in fact she needs to feel secure in my love. And that security is not in something I do for her, but in keeping my word. I need to understand that she is interested in me. And I need to sacrifice myself for her, not just my pocket. Things don't bring her satisfaction. She wants me. I will begin to understand that oneness in marriage is a lifetime commitment to communication and touching and leading them into an intimate relationship with God in every way. I need to understand that I need to have be the type of individual that will nurture and care for her just like I would my own body. If I got a problem with my body, I'm not critical. I get it fixed, right? And I fix it in some way that won't hurt very bad in the process. And exactly the way, if I'm going to try to fix something in my wife's life, which isn't a smart thing to do in a lot of cases, but we certainly need to treat them not critically, but with tenderness and care and a nurturing attitude. And as I begin to understand my wife, as I begin to live in reality of looking at Christ and saying, this is the way Christ loved, and I need to emulate that in my love for my wife. And as I begin to love my wife as Christ loved the church, we will begin to have Christian marriages that will be distinctly different than the marriages we have in our society. Our society, the marriages, the family is falling apart because we've thrown away the blueprint of God's Word. And we have the opportunity in our lives as men, as husbands, to love our wives as Christ loved the church and to demonstrate to the world what Christ's love is really like in action as we love our wives. What a wonderful testimony that is in your neighborhood. Hey, Esau's had your 25th wedding anniversary. Wow, that's an unusual occurrence, isn't it? Or their 50th. Or their 60th. And as they see them growing older, as I watched my father-in-law and a mother-in-law in a very real way, because they were the kind that expressed love more openly than my own parents did, although my parents loved each other very, very much, loved each other very, very much. But I can remember my mom and dad-in-law, and she'd sit in the middle of the car, and they were married 50 years, and I couldn't get over that. Because you see, they demonstrated something to me. They said, these folks, after 50 years, they're still in love with one another. They love one another. And they care for one another. And that's what we need to have in our families. And that is a demonstration to the younger ones in our midst. It's a demonstration to the world around about us that Christ makes a difference in the most intimate, wonderful relationship on this side of heaven. And that is the relationship of husbands and wives. May this few minutes together help us to learn something about how to love our wives even as Christ loved the church and be a demonstration in our lives of Christian marriage can really be. Any questions or comments? I've got 30 seconds. Well, maybe a minute. Yeah.
Who would know one thing? Why are they supposed to return them all?
I could go into a long...
Yeah, that's a strange message.
I'd love to answer that. Let me give you 2 minutes. You know what? Women don't go to a mall just for this. Women go to a mall for an experience. And that experience is shopping. They don't go there for this. They can spend all day in the mall and not buy anything. They can. Now, don't you wish they would? But they can do that. If you and I, when we go to a mall, we go to hunt. When we go and we find it, we bag it, we put it in the bag, and we go home with it. We're out of there in half an hour. And a woman, that's not what she does. She shocked! Until she drives us all insane. It is a very distinct difference. A woman doesn't go to the mall for things. She goes, yes, she buys things when she's there. But it's an experience in her life that you and I don't appreciate very much.
You indicated that the word desire in Hebrew. Does that mean her desire shall be, that's an italic, her
desire be control. The idea to control, to her desire toward, to reach out toward her husband.
That's why it's so difficult for someone to submit, because she hasn't had that
precision. But when she's filled with the Spirit, Ephesians chapter 5, what is one of the outcomes of filling with the Spirit? To be submissive one to another. That's the Spirit-filled teaching.
Yeah. I do have one question.
Yeah.
Anybody here who's been married and whose children have grown up in the midst of that faith? When we first got married, there was a lot of sexual, a lot of, you know, close contact, a lot of conversation, response once to each other. As the children came along, at least my wife, I noticed that my wife's affection was turned to children. And I was kind of, and I noticed that we kind of shoved aside. But very well, it's our life, and we kind of go along. Then when the children get older, she wants to go back to the original relationship. hey, Ken, not Ken, first name, Jim, I got a problem with that. Trying to understand the emotional drive and backwards practice. I've been kind of shunted off on the side track. She's on the speed track. She wants me to come back on the training. It's like,
well, what? I've been off the track for 13 years, 15 years, 20 years.
Right.
And that is something that in those middle portions of life, one has to work at. Both the husband and wife have worked very hard at not putting the husband on the side track. My wife had insights into that for which I am eternally thankful. My kids are grown and gone. And in our relationship, it was never different. I was never shunted off. Because my wife said that the most important relationship in her life was her husband. She helped with that condition all the way through those growing up years. Now, yes, there were times when time spent was much more with the kids than with me, you know, because of necessity. But in reality, during those times, and that's one of the great, you know, marriages fall apart in the world today in the first 5 years of marriage and after 20 years of marriage. Between 5 and 20, the curve is way down in the amount of divorces. It goes right back up to 20, 25 years. What you have nailed is the exact reason why the divorce has happened in 20 years. Because, hey, now the wife wants to come back and the husband says, man, I've got other issues. Then she does. Or he does. For a gal 20 years as junior and boom, you know, all kinds of crazy, nasty, horrible things happen in the process. But there is that period of time, and we need to teach that the most important relationship, the relationship that is more important, the relationship with the kids, is the relationship with the husband and wife. There's a little book that written, I didn't agree with everything in the book, but I love this title. It says, the most important thing you can do for your children is to love their mother. And the most important thing we can do for our children is to love our mother. The most important thing a mother can do for her children is to love their father. And to demonstrate that in the home. When that is demonstrated in the home, I can testify on purpose.